this dispute is not there at all, that whether there is the control of mind, whether it is easy or difficult. It is difficult. Lord agrees that there is absolutely no question about that, that it is a difficult task. And yet, it is next to impossible. Means it is not impossible, it is next to impossible in the literal sense that it is possible. It is possible after a proper practice continued for a long time. And this practice is described to be twofold, abhyas and vairagya. That is, the positive and negative, do's and don't do's, that you have to keep on doing the spiritual practices in terms of directing the actions and emotions and the efforts to control the mind with full force. And at the same time, one should not divert. One should not go to, one should prevent the digressions of mind. It is, one gets pulled into various directions, but it is therefore important not to succumb to those tendencies. One must resolutely resist those. So this practice gradually brings us to this understanding. The illumination starts flashing from inside, and gradually one reaches the goal. And then Arjuna raises the second doubt, that it all sounds perfect, all sounds very good, but suppose one dies before completion of the journey, then what happens? Then the person is lost from both sides. This world he has, because of the practice of renunciation, dispassion, he has already given up this side and has not got to that side. Then the person is just utterly destroyed, is it not? I started, jumped in the waters, gave up this shore, and before getting to the other shore, well, my energy gave way, my this strength gave way, and I get drowned before making to the next shore. So I am lost. I understand that maybe the other shore is better than the shore that I was. But now I have lost this and didn't get that, so lost from both sides. So what will happen, especially because the life is uncertain? When one will die, who knows? And therefore, what happens to such souls? And as we saw last time, that this question includes one very foolish, stupid, but a feeling that is in all of us, that this world has some value. This world is worth possessing to some extent. It may not have the ultimate value, but something is there, you know, something to hold on to is there in this world. So why give it up if there is no assurance of getting the other? But those who have examined this world, losing this world means losing really nothing. It is, Sri Ramakrishna used to give that nice example that all that this world is a collection of zeros. All zeros. They do not have any value. So, even if I ask Vishwanath, I will give you $0, will you like to get? Said, no Swami, thank you very much, but $0 I don't care for. Okay, 20 zeros, well, it means the same thing. He will thankfully refuse that offer. 100 zeros, Vishwanath, and then he will surely going to get irritated. That Swami, zeros, howsoever you may add, they don't amount to anything. So this world is like that. Here, getting little or getting big, it is nothing. And therefore, let us not think that even if I don't get that, not that I am going to lose anything. I am not going to lose anything real. I am going to lose only that which is not real, which is just appearance, that's all. So, therefore, one need not really worry about it. And yet, Lord tells that whatever efforts you have put in this life, they get carried over. They get carried over. Like in the some cell phone programs, you know, there are that carry-over minutes are there. If you don't use all your minutes this month, then they get carried over to the next month. So, even if you do not really complete whatever was to be completed in this, that journey is not completed. But yet whatever positive you have achieved, that remains. And then you start your journey from the next life where you left earlier, you begin from there. Nothing is lost. And thus, progressing like this, Lord tells what happens, that we were discussing 44th and 45th verse, that it becomes easier for this person in the next birth, because already the progress has been done. To some extent, the elevation has been achieved. Suppose you had to climb like the big, those very difficult mountain peaks. You cannot expect to climb them in one day. So you climb, say, 20,000 feet in 3, 4, 5 days, and then put a camp there. Because now you can't proceed, you need to take rest. So, and then, and next day you begin again, maybe the peak is another 3, 4 thousand feet, and you complete gradually, it becomes easy. So, like that we accumulate the progress every birth. Whatever we achieve remains with us. It is a cumulative effect that we see. Just as what I have achieved yesterday remains with me today, so also what I have achieved in this birth remains with me in the next birth. So, it is not lost.
Purvabhyasena te naiva hriyate yavashopi saha jijnyasurapi yogasya shabda brahmati vartate prayatnad yatamanastu yogi samshuddha kilbishah aneka janma samsiddha tato yati param gatim. By that very precious, by that very previous practice, he is irresistibly carried away. Even a mere inquirer after yoga transcends the Vedas. A very important statement.
that even a mere inquirer means the one who has taken up the journey in a serious way. That is why the inquiry has begun. The aphorisms on Vedanta by the great Vyasa, these aphorisms, they present all the teachings of Upanishads in a systematic manner. So these begin with that aphorism that Athato Brahma Jidnyasa. Now is the inquiry after the nature of the all-pervading absolute reality, Brahman. So the inquiry has begun. Where is it? How to get it? So such person eventually will get it out of the earnestness and sincere efforts. They will culminate surely. The idea is that till now maybe you had heard only about milk. Then after hearing it a few times, you got the idea that you should have it. And you started inquiry. Where do I get the milk? You have taken a big leap, a big step forward, that till now you were just theorizing. You had not started the efforts. On the practical side, there was no stirring at all. So therefore, even an inquiry, where is the milk available? I want to get the milk. That inquirer itself is better, transcends the mere reader about milk. Where do I get the milk? So similarly, the mere reader of the scriptures and the one who is seriously inquiring about yoga, jidnyasu api yogasya, even the one who is inquiring as to how to do the practice, yoga, as we have been seeing, this word implies or indicates the conversion of the theoretical understanding into tangible practical experience. That is called yoga. Yoga is conversion of theory into practice. Something that is intellectually understood, fine, and now that needs to be converted into the practical achievement. Like you heard about milk, now getting the milk and drinking it, that is the yoga. So even the inquiry, where do I get it, how to find it, all this becomes very meaningful, very important. So, yogasya jijnyasu, the inquirer after yoga transcends the mere reading of scriptures or the Vedas. A mere reader of the scriptures is just satisfied with this theory about it. It is like somebody is just reading the recipe, how something is to be made, but then suddenly gets an inspiration. Let me actually try making it. Till now I have read the recipe a few times, but just looking at the recipe does not fill the stomach. You can read it 100 times. Nothing goes into the stomach, nothing satisfies you just by reading the recipe. So this understanding dawns that no, actually I have to make it. Let me try to get the ingredients. Where do they, where are they available? You start getting information. You start practicing. You start collecting them. And then you are bent upon actually preparing it, eating it, and having that sense of fulfillment out of it. So therefore, this is a beautiful word, jijnyasu, api, yogasya. This even the inquirer after this yoga, because he has begun the path, the beginner also of the path, well, even if you we have begun the path, one day we will reach there. It is like that. If not today, let us begin. If not today, tomorrow we will reach. If not tomorrow, next month, or maybe after 10 years. But we are sure to reach if we start. So this is the yoga. Even the inquiry after yoga is a great leap than just intellectual study of Vedas. So Shabda Brahma. Veda is Shabda Brahma, means what? The Brahman in the form of word. The Brahman in the form of word is the scriptures. Now that is certainly Brahman, but it is not that you just hear it and do nothing. If you hear it, means you have to act on it. You have to get the meaning and act on it. Then only it is meaningful. Sri Ramakrishna used to give a beautiful analogy that what is the purpose of scriptures in life? One man got a letter from somebody staying in another town that please send some clothing and some grocery and some pots on such and such date to this place. Now that he lost the list somewhere, misplaced it, and then he started looking for it. Where did I keep the list? Let me see. And he, after a lot of search, ultimately he found that list. Then he read the list. Oh, okay. Those three pans and four pots and his grocery list and his clothing. Okay, got it. Then he tore the list and threw it away. Now, the list is no more. You read once, you understood. Now, 50 times reading it is not going to add anything. What you need to do now is procure those things, arrange and send them by FedEx or what. Sri Ramakrishna's time probably, though that wasn't there, so but some arrangement like that must have been, so to get it and send it, that is what is to be done. So we read the scriptures. We have various ways, you know, of showing our respect to scriptures. Amongst Hindus, a very peculiar thing is seen. It is in other religions also, but in Hindus it is, they have made a kind of, you know, big ritual of it. If there is a Bhagavad Gita, now great text, what will we do? Keep it, put it a nice cover on it, and put it in the shrine, every day sprinkle water on it, and apply sandal paste. And never will take the trouble of opening and reading and acting on it. So, that is not the purpose of scriptures. You understand it. And now the purpose of it is done. Now you got it. Now you heard it. Now act on it. So, that is the jijnyasu api yogasya. Now you have transcended the need of the scripture. Mere scriptural study. So therefore, Lord says that this is how the transcendence comes. And verily, a yogi who practices assiduously, being purified by all sense, is perfected through many births and then attains the supreme goal. That efforts continued. Birth after birth, long time, gradually has the effect. It is said that, look, that river Colorado hitting the big mountain, went on hitting, And now you have the Grand Canyon, you see. It is probably that hitting for many centuries it went on. First maybe a little bit of hole was made there, then more, bigger and bigger. Now it is a huge Grand Canyon there. It is like that effort, put it a little bit. Whatever we can, maximum efforts let us put in. Today we may not get the results. Nothing will be seen today. But let us continue. After a while, maybe it will require many births, but patiently let us proceed. That story Swami Vivekananda tells in Raja Yoga in this connection, that there were two spiritual aspirants, both were practicing various austerities. And Narada was walking on that road, and Narada was asked by these that, well, where are you going, Narada? I am going to see God on my regular trip, you know, I go and meet God once in a while. So, and I will tell the news of the earth and all. So please, can you do one favor to me? What is it? Both of them asked Narada, that ask Lord, that how long will they have to practice for emancipation, liberation. And Narada said, no problem, I will certainly ask. So, after, on his way back, he met the person who was performing lot of austerities, and he was sure that he should be getting it now, immediately. The liberation must be there, because for a long time he has been practicing. And he expectantly asked Narada, so what did Lord reply? Lord said that you need to practice for 4 more births. And the fellow was so saddened that, oh my goodness, I have been practicing meditation and mantra and all that for so many years continuously. And yet I require another 4 births. He became depressed and decided to give up all practice. Then another man, the other aspirant, he also asked Narada, did you ask my query? Oh yes, and Lord told me that the tamarind tree under which you are doing your spiritual practice. Now tamarind tree is a huge tree, and such small, infinitely many leaves, means practically speaking, a huge tree, and such small, maybe millions and millions of leaves on a tree. So he told, Lord told, that the as many leaves are there on this tree, you will have to take that many births. And this spiritual aspirant started dancing in joy. So that means the liberation is at hand, is it not? Only these many leaves, that many births I have to do, and then I get liberated. So he was ready to do the practice, and he heard the sound, my dear, you are already liberated. One who is ready to perform practice without giving up, without becoming impatient, will gradually will clear all the sins, all the blemishes, and thus having purified, now all karma is gone, removed, and no obstruction now to the divine awareness, and thus that person gets liberated from this bondage of body and mind. And thus that is called param gatim, means the ultimate goal. Why ultimate? There is nothing more to be achieved in life by anyone. That is the ultimate. So, there is a very special thing that you will see in Vedanta and such scriptural texts, that there is a goal to human life. All what we call progress, it has an end. It culminates at a point. It is not that infinite progress. Swami Vivekananda has discussed these ideas that many times the so-called sociologists, philanthropists and scientists, they speak of infinite continuous progress. And Swamiji says, do they understand the meaning of these words? What is the meaning of a progress without a goal? If there is goal, then you have at least the meaning to the word progress. Whatever takes you towards the goal, that is progress. Whatever takes you away from the goal is regress. And when you reach the goal, there is no more progress. It culminates. All ideas about progress culminate there. If you say that there is no goal, then that means there is no progress. There is no idea of progress. There is no definition for this word progress. It is therefore important, you know, that we say continuous, infinite, ever going on progress. Such a thing is meaningless. This is a contradiction in itself. Progress, the word progress, to become meaningful, has to have the idea of goal, where the progress culminates. Param gatim. You will see this and similar words in Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita, the ultimate goal. So the life has to be a journey directed towards the ultimate destination. Then it reaches that goal where one becomes perfect. So in the next verse, Lord says that is being the goal. The one who takes up yoga is superior to those who are otherwise doing activities which may look seemingly religious. He says, tapasvibhyo dhiko yogi jnanibhyo pimato dhikah karmibhyascha dhiko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. The yogi is regarded as greater than ascetics, greater than even men of knowledge, and greater also than those devoted to work. Therefore, be a yogi, Arjuna, be a yogi. We are exhorted by Lord to become yogis. In the sense, let us strive to get the tangible, practical experience of what is described in scriptures. All the austerities or the worships, meditations, so-called other religious practices like fasting and so forth are to be directed towards this goal. That is the meaning of yoga. Otherwise, seemingly, it may appear that this person is religious. What does this person do? Well, goes to temple every day, or performs some worship every day, or reads Bhagavad Gita every day. Well, is he practicing yoga? Is he making a conscientious effort to experience what is being read? Is he trying to experience the ultimate truth? Then that person is on the right track. So, Lord says that otherwise you are doing just merely those secular activities. Maybe they externally look religious or spiritual, that's all. But they, in essence, have nothing to do with spiritual progress. Therefore, one has to become a yogi. Tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. Arjuna, and through Arjuna, Lord is telling to all of us, Lord is telling Yogatmananda, Lord is telling Triveni, Lord is telling Charles, become yogi. We have to become yogi, told not only to Arjuna, it is told to everyone. Yes, George, is it not? Yes, Lord has told to George also, George, therefore become yogi. Strive to realize this truth in life. That is the message of Lord. And then he tells another very important thing. In Bhagavad Gita you see that as a chapter is ending, the connecting verse comes, connecting verse or verses that bring the important message of the next chapter. The verse that is now coming, it is the last verse of the sixth chapter, and there you find connection to the next, that is the seventh chapter. Yoginam api sarvesham madgate nantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo matah. Of all yogis, even he who possessed of faith worships me with his mind absorbed in me is, in my opinion, the greatest. All those who are striving to have this experience of the truth, they are certainly greater than those who are not striving. But amongst those strivers, those who are putting efforts in the most efficient and right manner, they are the best of the yogis. And who are they? Those who consider madgatena antaratmana, possessed of faith, worships me with his mind absorbed in me. Madgatena antaratmana, the one who is absorbed in Lord by heart and soul, such a being is, and is worshipping the Lord with that Shraddha, a dynamic, well-directed faith. That is Shraddha. And Shraddha is not just mere belief, but a faith. It is difficult to just translate this word, but it is the faith which is dynamic in nature. The famous example that Sri Ramakrishna gives, Swami Vivekananda also has quoted that, it is that suppose somebody learns that there is a lot of gold kept in the next room. Now if suppose Vishwanath learns that, he said, okay, let it be, he is not a thief, you know, so therefore he won't, his mind will not get rattled by that, okay, there is a lot of gold there. But suppose a thief learns it. Now, both have faith, you know, that Vishwanath also may have faith that there is gold there, but Vishwanath will just sit there and go about his other works. If the thief learns it, now that information will not let him rest. He will keep on thinking and making efforts how to break the wall and how the gold is to be just stolen. So, like that, when somebody has a faith like that thief, that yes, God is, I must get that God. Otherwise, most people, God is, okay, God is. Whether God is or is not, that makes really no sense. Yes, it is, maybe there somewhere. Okay, some said he is in somewhere in this sixth heaven or seventh heaven, maybe in 20th heaven. What am I going to do with that? Nothing. Does that God help me in any way? If he is going to help me, maybe I can go on a pilgrimage or offer some donation to church and all that. That's all, but what else? God is to be realized, that idea doesn't come there. So, that is called Shraddha, that I must experience this. Life is for that, otherwise it is a waste. Otherwise, this human birth is a waste. This person feels it, you know, very deeply, that I must achieve this goal, and therefore puts in all the efforts, and with all that effort, he worships. What is intended here is the flow of the mind towards God. It is a very important, most efficient tool for most of us, that the tool of devotion or bhakti. So from seventh chapter, the chapters on bhakti or devotion will begin. Up to sixth chapter, it was considered the karma, as karma kind of, that is the chapters devoted to action. Karma yoga was the main dominant theme in first six chapters. Now, we'll begin that idea of training one's mind towards God through devotion. Because it is the most important, the easiest, most convenient tool that one can use. Our sometimes ego and resistance towards that idea of God does not allow us to practice it, but it is important that we get rid of that sense of ego and think of the divine presence in whatever form it is convenient to us. When we do it, what happens? Then that person realizes God. Lord says here, yukta tamo mataha, the most unified is, that is my opinion, yukta tamaha. Tama suggests superlative degree in Sanskrit. So, that person is the best amongst yogis. And so, he will describe it from this, in the seventh chapter onwards. And by the grace of God, we also, like described here, take up the study where we are stopping today for the summer break from this September 17th. Again, we shall begin the Bhagavad Gita classes, God willing, and today, we conclude this chapter called Abhyasa Yoga or Dhyana Yoga, means the yoga of meditation or yoga of practice. So these are very significant words. Bhagavad Gita, it ends like this, that Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su. Bhagavad Gita means it is a song of God. Singing, you know, it just if somebody is talking, it is not nice to hear. But singing, yes, if a good singer is there, then you like to hear it better. So this is a song. Gita literally means it's a song. And singer is who? If the singer doesn't know how to sing and singing, then it is torture to hear it. But Lord is singing, you know. He sings very well. So, best of the singers, in fact. So, Lord has sung this. It brings all the message of the Upanishads. In this, it is Brahma Vidya Yoga Shastra, theory as well as practice, put together, combined into one. So, this chapter ends here. And we shall conclude today no question answers to me today. Why I don't say no questions. Questions are welcome, but to answer those questions today, we have a guest Swami who has come to give a retreat. Tomorrow, you know that we have the retreat, and for that, Swami Atmajnanananda has come, and I requested him that he can answer the questions, not only on Bhagavad Gita or what we have been studying. You can ask questions on anything, any spiritual matter, religious matter that you feel you should get answer to. He is very good at taking up the questions. Not like the politicians, you know, politicians avoid the questions. If the journalist asks questions, they have the technique of avoiding the questions. But he doesn't avoid. He will take the question, analyze it, and give you the right answer, satisfying answer. So, I will conclude with the closing prayers. In fact, you might have noticed we didn't chant the opening prayer today, because we will chant it at the end as the conclusion of this class. So we shall salute Lord Krishna. So both these prayers will be chanted together today.
Vande Vamsidharam Krishnam Smayamanamukhambujam Pitambaradharam Nilam Malyachandanabhushitam Radha Chittachakurendum Sandarya Sumahodadhim Parat Parataram Devam Brahmananda Kripanidhim Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Grathitam Purana Munina Madhya Mahabharatam Advaitam Ritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanusandadhame Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshinim Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistaraihi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namaniyane Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.
Thank you, Maharaj. So, I'm ready. Yes.
I read in one of the Vedanta publications that Suryodhana, Arjuna's enemy, knew what the right thing to do was, but he was powerless to do it, or something to that effect. Is that true? And if so, why would someone not be able to do the right thing, even if they realize what it is?
Yeah, there's a verse from Prapanna Gita. Do you know the whole verse, Manoj? Dharmam janami dharmam na cha tat pritti ani adharma. Yeah, adharmam ne vritti. Yeah, tvaya hrishikesha hrishpitena yata to kurumi. Okay. I don't know what it means. No, this is the one of the problems in life. There was a theory that Socrates had. If we know the good, we'll do the good. And it's a nice theory, but is it true? Sometimes we know what we should do, right? But we don't do it. And other times we know we should avoid doing something, but we do it anyhow. Because there's always this struggle in the mind. We're pulled in two different directions. We have what we can think of as the higher mind and the lower mind. There's always this tension in within everyone. The saint, it's very easy, because they're both in line. Whatever the desire is and whatever the understanding is, they're hand in hand. And the lower person also, there's no problem. They have no discrimination anyhow, so they simply follow their desires. It's the in-between people that struggle, like us. We have some discrimination, so we know what the right thing to do is. On the other hand, we still have our desires. We know we would enjoy this. It would be nice to share this with others, but it's my favorite dessert. So I'd rather have it for myself. So it's not just Duryodhana, it's not any one particular person. This is a struggle that we all have in spiritual life. The sad fact is that there's always a catch-up phase with the mind. In spiritual life, this is the main problem in spiritual life that I also find personally. That from the point of view of our understanding, we can develop some firm conviction in spiritual life, this is what we want. I don't care for the things of the world. I only care for God. I don't care for pleasures. I don't care for enjoyments. I don't care for this, for that. All I care is for some higher experience, some higher realization. I understand these things. I know that giving up selfishness is the way to have peace. I understand all of these things. But the mind itself is still clinging to the old habits and the old desires. These old samskaras are there. So there's a gap. We have our understanding, but it takes time for these impressions to slowly change. So there's always a struggle that way. This is the struggle between what they call shreyas and prayas, that which is pleasurable and pleasant and nice and enjoyable, and that which is ultimately good, which is for our own higher good. We may understand that. We may understand, yes, that I've been doing these other things lifetime after lifetime, running after these pleasures, and I only get burned. I keep burning my fingers, but still we go after it. Sri Ramakrishna says it like the camel. The camel likes a certain type of plant that has thorns. And every time it eats that plant, it enjoys it, but its gums bleed from the thorns. So we're a little bit like that. We know that our gums will bleed. We know that we'll get burnt. But it's because of the nature of the mind that it takes time for the mind to catch up. It's lagging behind and it's trying to drag us down. So in this stage of spiritual practice, it's like there are two people inside fighting each other. There's a higher mind and this lower mind. When the higher mind gains control, then we have peace. When the lower mind starts to cooperate then Gita says it's our best friend. And when it's fighting against us, trying to pull us down, it's our worst enemy. So this is a very sad fact of life, that even when we develop a very firm conviction, yes, this is the life I want to lead, still the mind will reject. It said, I've been enjoying these things for so many years. Don't deprive me of all these things. Let me enjoy them a little bit longer. And it affects our discrimination. This is another thing. Our sense of discrimination is not as trustworthy as we would like to think that it is. Our sense of discrimination is constantly changing because of this ability of the mind to rationalize. Now, we all know this rule of shopping. You know the rule of shopping. Never shop when you're hungry. Right. It's the nature of the mind. We want to give up some food. Say we know that if we eat pizza, we get sick. We get some indigestion. We can't sleep that night. But it tastes good. Now, we have a certain type of discrimination after we finished it. And we're suffering from that heartburn. That discrimination says, no, it wasn't worth it. I know ultimately it's better I simply give it up. That's one type of discrimination. But we haven't had pizza for a long time. Right. Or our discrimination says, one more time. You enjoy it so much, so you'll take some antacid before you go to sleep, or you'll put up with it. You know, life is short. There's so many things, difficult things in life. Why not have a little enjoyment and a little pleasure? That's also discrimination. But it's discrimination based on ignorance, based on the desires of the lower mind. So until the mind gets a little bit mature, until the higher mind and lower mind are in sync, we can't trust that mind. Thakur says the mind becomes the guru eventually. But this lower mind, there's a very untrustworthy rascal. We can't trust that mind very much. That's why, what do we trust? Guru and scripture. We have these standards, pramana, the standards that we have to follow. We take the advice of those who have had some higher type of realization. And we have to tell this lower mind, no more. I'm not going to listen to you anymore. I know what the right thing to do is. You're going to tell me, do it tomorrow. You don't have to do it today, do it tomorrow. No. I've been going through this ritual day after day, year after year after year, that now finally I'll start to say, no, I don't have to listen to you. I can take control, that this higher mind is the one that I want to follow, based on real discrimination, a higher type of discrimination, and based on this understanding of ultimately what's good for us. And this term discrimination, Sri Ramakrishna uses it in two senses, a philosophical sense between the real and the unreal. But the other sense is even more important for most of us, and that is what ultimately is good for us, what ultimately will take us to something higher. And when we see that something is really ultimately just a way of keeping us in bondage, or not even that, it may just be a way of postponing the real spiritual work we have to do, then our discrimination will tell us, no, if this is an obstacle or if this is keeping me from something higher, then forget it. I'm going to discard it, ruthlessly discard it. So that's the higher type of discrimination that we have to follow. And it's a very important point. A very important point that sometimes we do know what we should do, but we don't do it. And we know what we should avoid, and yet we keep doing it over and over and over again. We keep chewing on this thorny plant, on our gums keep bleeding, but we enjoy it. Thakur says this world is like a hog plum. What is a hog plum? I don't know exactly. Okay. Anyhow, it's a certain fruit that it's mostly the pit. There's not much flesh, and the skin, even like our regular plum, the skin is a little bit bitter sometimes. So there's just a very small amount of flesh inside that tastes good, but it gives colic. It makes you sick if you eat it. This is the nature of the world. But we enjoy the flavor of it. So we put up with the other things. Until one day we finally say, why should I go through this over and over again? How many times do we have to suffer before we learn our lessons and decide to follow this higher type of discrimination? So it's a very good question, a very good point. Yeah. Next. Okay. Okay, now the Swami told you that I won't dodge any questions like a politician, but I will freely tell you when I don't know the answer to something. Yeah, there are different theories. There are different theories like that whether the guru takes birth again when you take birth, that may be, it may not be, but there's one theory at least that the guru will not accept his own liberation until all of his disciples are liberated. He'll wait and holding the door open until everyone goes through. Now, there are all different types of gurus also, and different calibers and different levels and everything. Some have the capacity to take some of your karma onto themselves even. Others, they may not be more advanced than us, or they may be less advanced than us. So there are all different levels, and it's very hard to say, answer these types of questions. But partly it depends on our faith also, that we gain something in spiritual life when we have this Shraddha. Shraddha generally refers to scripture and guru, the special type of reverence and love and respect. So that's why Thakur says that even if the guru goes to the tavern, to the grog shop, and drinks, still, I look upon him as the embodiment of bliss. Amar guru shura bari jai, jodapi amar guru shura bari jai, totapi amar guru nittananda rai. He had all these beautiful little expressions and things. So sometimes, through our reverence for the guru, we gain more than we would get from the guru himself that way. So we should have that respect and reverence. In our tradition, we look upon gurus as the transmitters of the power of Sri Ramakrishna, that he's the real guru in our tradition, and all of the others are instruments through which his power is transferred to us. I've asked some of our senior swamis, in fact, these different types of questions. When you give initiation, do you sometimes feel something? If it's someone who maybe is not so pure, because we see with the direct disciples or Thakur Holy Mother, they would come down with fever or something, and, you know, he said, we're not that type of guru. We turn everything over to Thakur. So, you'll get lots of different answers to this question. I can't give any definitive answer to this. Maharaj, any answer? Okay. Then there was another question behind you. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just curious about trying to get to a place of unconditional love. And trying to, I was wondering if it's in the sense of separating. For example, say we see someone, you know, stealing something or, you know, doing something that stems from a place of ignorance. Is it kind of separating that idea of their ignorance from
divine potential within them and loving that divine potential within them? That a way to kind of almost get to a place of where there's one field of unconditional love and all beings?
Wow. Yeah.
There's another very interesting and tough question. Unconditional love. Unconditional love we can use the paradigm of this divine love. Normally when we think of the different types of love, we're talking about not so much on the human level, but on the divine level. And we have different levels of love. Symbolically, they're explained in terms of the different types of these gopis, these milkmaids of Vrindavan with regard to Sri Krishna. Some of them, they loved him. They all had this love for him, but they wanted to get that joy out of it. That was their really main goal. So there was something selfish about it, even though it was really love. Then the next higher were the ones that said, no, I want to get something, but unless Krishna is also happy, unless he's getting something out of this, how can I be happy? But then the very highest is Radha. The example of her is that I don't care anything about myself. If Krishna is happy, I'm happy. So this is considered unconditional because we're not seeking anything in return. Now, if we transfer this to the human level, what does it mean? We love others. The closest we see to this on the human level probably is the mother to the child. Because the small child, at least at that point, the mother's not thinking, well, the son will grow up and take over the family business and support us in the old age, or the daughter will come and bring a nice husband, and nothing like that. The mother sees this helpless child and knows that the child doesn't even have any sense of personality, ego, I, or anything, nothing that, at least at that moment, that the child can feel any sense of gratitude towards the mother, yet she loves the child. Now, with regard to other people, we want to love other people unconditionally. It's a little bit of a different level and a different understanding, because we're talking about people that we don't really know. Right, we see a certain type of behavior and everything. So the goal, to me, with other people, is what Holy Mother says. We want to feel that they're our own. They're not strangers to us. And the point that you made is the other very important point, that what do we do with regard to behavior that we see in other people that looks to us like it's not up to the mark? Maybe we see that they get angry. Maybe we see that they have some arrogance. They have some meanness, that they want to hurt people. How do we deal with that? Because we want our love of other people to be not simply that, well, God dwells within them, within all beings. That's a very nice philosophical idea. But also on this personality level, we want to have some way to deal with other people where we like them. One thing to say, yes, I'll stand with reverence before this individual because God dwells within as the inner controller, as the witness, as the real higher self and everything. But what about the individual, which is a combination of mind and personality and characteristics and qualities and everything? Now, when Holy Mother says, don't see the faults of others, dosha, she uses this word dosha, a defect. Now, this is a judgment. Now, I don't think that Holy Mother meant to say that we should all be fools, that we shouldn't recognize that someone is a cheat, that someone is a thief, someone may rob us. She didn't want us to be fools. Sri Ramakrishna also, he used to say, be a devotee, don't be a fool. So what does it mean? We take a certain attitude that these are qualities and characteristics that belong to the mind of this other person. We call them samskaras. These are impressions from past lifetimes, perhaps, or from the family situation, how they grew up, all of these things. Now, is it a defect or is it just a characteristic? The moment we change our focus from this idea of dosha to this idea of guna, guna is just a characteristic. We're removing that judgment from it. I'm not saying that, this is a mean-spirited person. I'm saying that this quality of meanness somehow has attached itself to this person through some past habits or some past associations. And it's not something that I should look down upon. It's not something that I should judge. It's not something I should ignore. It's not that I'll be a fool and think, won't be able to distinguish between a good person and an evil person. I can see that, but I won't make that judgment that way. I'll say, yes, this person is like that. I spoke here once on this the scorpion and saint story. To me, it's a very, very helpful story that the holy man is sitting on the bank of the river meditating, and a scorpion comes and stings it. And his hands go up, and the scorpion falls back into the water. So the saint sees it and scoops it out again to save its life, and it gets stung again. And it happens several times, and then finally he takes it far away so it won't fall back into the water. Now someone was watching and said, I don't understand your behavior. How foolish you are. Why do you keep saving the scorpion when in repayment for saving its life, it stings you? So the holy man said that this is the nature of a scorpion to sting. Why should I change my nature? It's my nature to do good. Why should I change my nature because of the nature of the scorpion? So he didn't have that attitude that how ungrateful this scorpion is, how horrible it is, it doesn't deserve to live, why should I save it, why should I do anything like that? That's its nature. Swabhava. We can take that attitude towards other people. And if not love them unconditionally, then at least have some fellow feeling and some compassion and some understanding. I'll speak about this a little bit tomorrow. This is one of the meanings of charity. Not just giving money, but to have a charitable view of things. Look at things in the best light. If I were that other person, if I'd grown up in that situation, if I'd had that education, if I'd been born with the mental skills and all of these other things, perhaps I would have been a worse person. So why should I judge that person and look down on that person? If that person had been born with the advantages that I have, perhaps that person would be much greater than I am. We don't know any of these things. So to strive for real unconditional love on this human level is a very difficult thing. I don't know, unless one is really a perfect saint, I don't know if one gets that even. Sri Ramakrishna, he had people that he cared for more than other people. Even he had his likes and dislikes. Even Holy Mother, we say, everyone was her child, but still she could recognize that there were some that was a joy to be around. When they left, she would cry. She wouldn't cry when everyone left. So even for these God-realized souls, on the human level, it's very difficult not to see some type of distinction, but without this judgment, without this looking down on anyone, with this love and compassion and an open heart. If we can do that much, I think this is close to unconditional love as we'll get on the human level. Next.